CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We talked earlier about the Cavs and their big win over the Warriors last night. 2-0 start to this West Coast trip, Jake. Is this something, like, is how the Cavs are playing? We talked so much about how people are maybe not giving them enough credit right now because they're looking too far ahead and saying they got to prove in the playoffs. How much of what they're doing right now do you think is replicable come postseason time and can equate to making a deep postseason run?
So I get torn back and forth in my own head about this. Just the idea that the way that they play on the court, it makes a lot of sense that it would translate. Like, they play through their stars for the most part. It's really good ball movement. Everything that they do is a continuity-based thing, and it's not like you're basically banking on Donovan Mitchell to drop 50 or you lose, right? Like, that's something that's not replicable because you can't just count on somebody to game after game
unless
be
you
the
have
star.
Like LeBron James. That's right. Like, if you have like one of those types of players, of course. But if it's Donovan Mitchell, who's more like he fits into a system and he's embracing that system, that's not going to fly. Yeah.
Right. So that part is okay. I think that translates great. The other part of it, though, is the Cavs benefit during the regular season right now from running like 10, 11 deep. Right. The bench and the bench depth is great. Historically, we've seen that not really work in the playoffs. It's like when you try to go 10, 11 deep, you end up with guys who just aren't producing, and you sort of have to have the solidified like 8 to 9. Like, 9 is even pushing it sometimes, but like an 8. And then you can obviously like sprinkle in a couple of minutes here and there on other guys. But for the most part, the chunk of your minutes goes to like 8 players. The Cavs kind of spread it out right now where it's like you can go 11 guys who are all getting 10, 15 minutes. And I just don't know if that exactly translates, because I don't know. It's nice in one area because I do feel like the Cavs are very deep to the point where, hey, if Caris LeVert's having a bad night, that 10th guy off the bench might be the one to pick it up, right? Sam Merrill might step in and have a great night instead. But at the other side of it, it's like, okay, sure, that's a thing that you can do. Is it just going to turn into you're playing too many guys, and when it push comes to shove, I don't want Donovan Mitchell and Darius playing 30 minutes in a playoff game. That's when you want them to be playing 38, 39, 40, and then sort of pushing the limits where you have your best players on the court.
Yeah, I think what you bring up is probably the biggest question in all of this, because I think you're spot on. I mean, we saw with J.B. Bickerstaff, for example, he was only really running a certain amount of guys deep during the regular season, and then in the playoffs that got even tighter. And he had like his, you know, seven or eight guys that he would go to. And so, yeah, can you actually win by going 11 guys deep? It's not usually done that way. I think that's fair. And that is maybe the biggest question I have. I guess the other part of this, though, is like, I think the point is that Kenny Atkinson is going to try to do that in the playoffs. Like, I don't know that it's going to change massively from regular season to postseason in terms of philosophy. I'm guessing he still is going to focus on that being their priority, that being their identity, that being the thing that they do. And so because of that, I think he's at least going to give it a shot. Like, he's going to see if it works, right? And maybe if you find out in the first round or two it doesn't, then you pivot. I think that's kind of the point, though, is Kenny is going to do that no matter what, and we're going to find out. So I get at the heart of the question is like the idea that like, yeah, maybe it doesn't, but I don't see why like the level they're playing can't equate or translate. It's just a matter of, you know, going so deep on the bench. Is that something that's actually viable? And I guess it comes down to two, like if guys are going to make shots, and that's the biggest difference is postseason time. There's always the cliche of, you know, your role players play better at home. What is that going to look like when you're in a 7-game series and you're going on the road to certain places? Are your Ty Jeromes going to keep playing at a high level or in spurts? Is Isaac Okoro going to keep shooting near 40% from three? Is Dean Wade going to be able to provide that offensive spark for you? Those are the big questions I have. If they're doing that, then like I don't see why they can't just continue rolling with the same rotations and going as deep as they are on the roster as Kenny Atkinson is.
So the problem that I think you run into is in the playoffs when everybody sort of turns up their intensity, right? We talked about earlier. Yeah. The Cavs already sort of feel like they have that turned up intensity. Other teams sort of take it to a next level based on where they're playing at now to the postseason. I think that is the general rule in the NBA is that you turn it up a notch. if you're going against, throw out the Boston Celtics, and Jason Tatum is playing 37 minutes in a game, and you're matching him up more often than not, right? Or Donovan's only playing 29, 30 minutes. So those extra, the extra time where he's not being matched up with Donovan, and from terms of an offensive versus offensive perspective, but instead that turns out to be Max Strus, who's going up against him. Can you keep up that offensive production where the Tatums of the world are going to keep scoring and do what they do throughout the year, and Donovan's sitting on the bench while he's letting other guys go, so he's fresh the entire time he's in the game. When a lot of these guys just play through being tired and learn that throughout the season, that's another thing that concerns me. I know that Donovan can do it. I've seen him do it.
Yeah.
I know that all these guys can, but when you go through a whole season of not tacking on the minutes in various points, when it comes to that point where you have to play the 35, 40 minutes, what happens in those back end of the games? Like, does your production fall off when you're not as fresh?
I also don't think you want to like test that theory in the regular season. I mean, that was one of the biggest criticisms of Jimmy Bickerstaff, was that he played Donovan Mitchell too much during the regular season. So I think you just kind of trust that your star players are going to rise to the occasion there. And maybe the depth part of this comes into play where maybe he won't be able to go 11 deep every game. But because he has so much depth and because he counted on so many guys during the regular season, you know, maybe one game he's turning to Ty Jerome to close out a game in a lineup. Maybe another game he's turning to Dean Wade to close out a game in a key line. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's where the depth comes into play. It's like, maybe he does end up running 8 deep. Maybe he can even extend it to 9 deep at times. But it's like different nights or different games he's riding the hot hand, or he's riding the player that he feels like is going to be the best to finish out any specific game or any specific series.
I mean, you see that in the starting lineup right now, don't you? Like, yeah. They're basically playing matchups at the three spot. I mean, Max Strus obviously is still
sort
of the
Max
Strus restriction.
I think going to be there more full time, but yes, like that's the way they're doing it right now.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, they'll bounce back around with Isaac Okoro's obviously hurt, but you've seen him slot in.
Yeah.
Sam Merrill slotted in the other night against Utah and had a great night. Last night was Dean Wade in the starting lineup. They sort of just play the matchup game in the starting rotation and move from there. So I agree with you. I don't think that it's anything different. Probably when you get into those series where, okay, this series or this game specifically, it might just be more of a Dean Wade style of night, and Sam might take the back row to the bench. You might only play 7-8 minutes, and then you roll it around. I don't know. It's just, I think the Cavs are like championship contenders, right? I think they can do it. I think it will translate. Yeah. I just think if you're going to have questions, that's where you look. Is that going to actually get there? Or is that going to be something that sort of is their Achilles heel? Is you're trying to play 10, 11 deep, and you're not getting good nights out of guys who are on the floor then for 15, 20 minutes when the 8 guys on the floor for the other side are all having, you know, you have 7 good nights and 1 bad night.
Speaking of championship contenders, the Ohio State Buckeyes are playing for the Rose Bowl in the quarterfinal round of the college football playoff tomorrow, 5 o'clock kick. We know it's a big game. We know it's a big deal. Some interesting comments. We found out yesterday that Mike Vrabel's contract with the Browns as an advisor ended yesterday. And so he can now start shopping around and fielding calls and starting his interview process, which it sounds like he's going to get a lot of interest in the NFL. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, though, noted one sort of important thing about where he could end up yesterday.
Mike Vrabel's consulting contract with the Cleveland Browns. We helped the coaching staff and actually took a very heavy-handed look at the offensive line this season. That expired today. That means if you're a team that has an opening, and the Jets, the Bears, and the Saints are those teams, you could speak with Vrabel in person. And of course, he is expected to have interest again from all of those teams, but the timing is significant here as well. The reason I say that is because, of course, Mike Vrabel has been linked to the Ohio State job, which is not open. Ryan Day is still the head coach at Ohio State. The day play on Wednesday, if something really terrible happens and they decided to make a change, wouldn't be surprised to see Ohio State take a look at Vrabel as well. So the timing here is very interesting. We'll see if Vrabel interviews somewhere this week or if it comes in the near future after that.
Audio curse to the NFL Network. I love that he phrased it as "if something terrible happens," by the way, which makes it sound way more ominous. Like, if Ryan Day is struck by lightning and dies, yeah, there's going to be a vacancy there. It's not, he could have just said, like, yeah, you know, if they lose that game and they decide to go in a different direction. No, he said, if something terrible happens. But I digress on that.
The Buckeyes fans, they would paint it that way. Something terrible has happened.
Something
They've
terrible
lost
has
to
happened.
Oregon.
I mean, Ryan Day might as well be dead in their eyes if that happens. I mean, yeah. Well, and so I think this opens an interesting question because, I mean, this is Lima's pipe dream. Like, this is Lima's dream come true. Mike Vrabel to Ohio State. But given what Ross Bjork has said in recent weeks about how fans are too crazed about championships and all this different stuff, it doesn't sound like they're going to make a change. But I do, like, hearing this yesterday sort of rekindled all these thoughts for me of like, oh, if Ian Rappaport is hearing that he's going to be linked to the Ohio State job, does that mean this thing is still open if they fall short of some goal that they have maybe in their own heads for where the season goes? And does that goal include, like if they fall short tomorrow, if they lose to Oregon, even in a close game, does that mean Ryan Day is coaching for his job tomorrow? Like, that's kind of where my head went when I heard those comments from Ian Rappaport.
I think he has to be, right? If you would have told
Buckeyes fans. I mean, in the eyes of the fans, yes. And in the eyes of maybe the boosters, potentially. But is that the case?
You're telling a booster that they spent $20 million on this roster.
Yeah, but you also got to tell the boosters that they got to spend, what, $37 million to buy him out?
Okay, you think you're going to be happy? Okay, so you're going to pay $20 million into a roster that is going to lose to Michigan, not make the Big Ten championship, and get knocked out in the quarterfinals of the college football playoffs. Congratulations.
No, listen, I you know where I stand on this at this point. Like, Ryan Day basically has to prove it now. He lost the Oregon game earlier. Last week was a step in the right direction, beating Tennessee. I think that was a gut check moment for him and something that he can hang his hat on temporarily. But we know there's larger things in play here when you talk about how much they spent on the roster, expectations at Ohio State. I mean, I ripped Ross Bjork for basically being a carpetbagger and trying to say the fans are too crazed and have too high expectations.
Right.
It's ridiculous. That's Ohio State. If you can't accept that, then you should go too. But so I understand that. But at the same time, I'm also thinking about like the financial side of this. And in today's day and age, these teams aren't as willing to like spend the money on buying out a coach necessarily. They also understand like the recruiting part of this. And I'm kind of just still banking on the fact that I think Ross Bjork being public about, well, Ryan Day's not going anywhere, tells me that he's probably not going anywhere, even if he loses this game. So yes, in my mind, I'm like, if he loses, I think it's back on the table that, yeah, you fell woefully short of all three of your goals that you set out for this season with a program that has super high expectations. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like that the program themselves, with the AD, the boosters included, are thinking about it from that perspective, which maybe isn't right, but that's my feel of it. Am I wrong?
I feel like you have to. I don't know. I don't know that the money is going to be the thing that makes the difference. Like, we can talk about it's limited 100%. I also think and know that there's people who have gone to Ohio State. I'm sure boosters for the football program were making a lot more than $37 million and willing to contribute that to make this team win and to have Ryan Day out of there if he can't get that done.
Well, and I guess the other big question is Mike Vrabel even a viable option? Because I've been operating under the premise that he's not. I just don't think he's ever going to go back to college. I think he talks about it. He hates it, yeah. But if Rappaport's saying it, it's
feels
kind
like
of
it's possible. Yeah.